Spring is in the air, and it's the season for growth and new experiences in your career. Explore the country with rewarding travel assignments through Arias Medical Group. Know a PT? Make a referral and earn up to $1,000. To learn more, call 1-800-340-2619 or visit ariusmedical.com. That's AURUSmedical.com.
This is the PT Pinecast, a podcast that talks about physical therapy over beer, bringing together clinicians, researchers, and forward-thinking PTs in a show that's anything but boring.
Let there be beer!
This is the PT Pinecast with your host, Jimmy McKay.
Our next guest is best known for her documentary, Twitch, which follows her as an 18-year-old undergoing genetic testing for Huntington's disease, which claimed the life of her mother. The film has traveled to six continents where it has been shown to over 5,000 people across 30 cities. She currently resides in North Carolina, where she works for the Southern Coalition for Social Justice as their advocacy coordinator. Welcome to the PT Pintcast, Kristen Powers. Kristen, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
We say the best conversations happen at happy hour. Welcome to ours. I'm having a traveler pineapple shandy right now. Are you having anything? Is there any cold beverage in your hand right now?
I'm having a beer from local Ponysaurus Brewery.
Ooh, say it again. Ponysaurus?
Ponysaurus, yes.
I like when people go local.
Yeah, it's an interesting logo. It's very unique. It's literally a pony head on a dinosaur body.
I like it. See, I like when I find out about like just little things that I wouldn't if I'm not from your neck of the woods. So now if I ever see that, I'm going to eventually try it because I'm like, ooh, I've heard about that. Kristen told me about it. So that's cool. So excited to have you on. Actually, one of the PT students that works with us for the podcast, I think the story was you talked at his school and he's like, listen, you've got to talk to this girl. It's a really, really great, interesting story. Went out and watched the documentary, as I mentioned in the intro. You told an interesting story and then you told it well. And you know, we mentioned in the intro, six continents, you know, more than 5,000 people right now. It's just getting going. You couldn't get to Antarctica or what? With the seventh continent wasn't going to happen or what?
I haven't found a scientist yet, but someone let me know that there's HD research going on in space, so I might circumvent Antarctica altogether.
If you haven't seen Twitch yet, I think you should go out and check it out. Available worldwide on iTunes, Google Play, Vimeo. I saw it on Amazon, so literally you can get it right now on your computer. And that's one thing we find out about you through the voices of your friends is you're not real keen on people telling you what to do and how to do it.
Yeah, it might be my foible, my greatest foible, but it's a strength and a weakness at the same time.
Literally, you were an 18-year-old. You were dealing with something difficult. And we'll get to that. You just started making a documentary and then eventually told your parents.
Yeah, I had a history of doing things as a teenager and a kid that probably were unexpected of my age, and my parents, particularly my dad, would always find out long after I had started them.
Oops, did I not mention that to you, Dad? That sort of thing?
Yeah, like I thought. That's I told cool. you already.
I want to talk about just what it takes to go into just waking up one morning and saying, I want to make a movie, and then we'll get into the story. So time, cost, I'm talking about cost of money, I'm talking about cost of your existence, heart, soul, pain, fear, to actually just turn a camera on yourself and say, in a pretty intimate time of your life, going through something pretty severe, that's really brave of you to do. So kudos to you. What's that like?
I think growing up, I was a pretty shy kid. And so people find it surprising that I'm willing to talk about my story so much. But for me, when my mom was first diagnosed with Huntington's, I didn't tell anyone because I was affected by the stigma that surrounds this disease because it seemed shameful or embarrassing. I had a lot of kids tell me that my mom was a drunk or using drugs, and I didn't even know that she had the disease, so I didn't know how to respond. So for me, the first time I felt more empowered with my experience with Huntington's was when I had the chance to tell the story to somebody else. It was actually to a bunch of girls at my first ever sleepover. That for me was kind of very, very therapeutic. So for me, storytelling was how I coped with what I was going through. The documentary was a long time coming. I probably had the idea when I was 13 or so that I wanted a really good documentary about Huntington's disease so I could show people what it looked like instead of just listing out the symptoms. It's actually interesting timing that we're doing this today because I just came back from New York City where I showed my film at this Global Teen Leader Summit called 3.Dash at the Just Peace Summit they host. And I was a participant in that summit when I was a teenager, and that was where I got the idea for a Twitch where I would follow my own genetic testing and show that side of the story. So it was probably about four years of me thinking about how I wanted to tell this story. And then the light bulb moment came off around 2011.
And then how long did it take from beginning to, you know, putting publish to having it on iTunes, Google Play, Vimeo, Amazon, all that?
I'd say about 3 years. So I did about 6 months of research, then 3 months of fundraising initially to make sure I could afford a film crew because I wanted to do it professionally. I filmed from, I think it was April 2012 to July 2012, and then spent the rest of the time starting college and then finding a editor and raising more money for that editor.
Sure.
So I ended up finishing the final product early 2014, screening it at my school, and then starting a tour later that year.
So when someone finds out you made your own documentary about a time in your life, what do you tell them? How do you frame the story? Where does it begin?
I think for me, most people, when they find out I make a documentary, think I'm a filmmaker, which is an interesting description. I feel like I'm more of a storyteller than I am a filmmaker. I wouldn't say I have the technical skills, but people find, like, kind of like you had said, that they find it really inspiring that I was able to tell this really personal story. But for me, it was very natural. So it's kind of a little bit hard for me to, like, know how to react when people say that, because it just felt like the next natural step in my Huntington's disease experience.
I saw a video of you on your website, which I think people should check out too, twitchdocumentary.com. It was of you speaking at a TEDx event. And what was that like, being able to walk on the TED stage? That's really great that you got to get on there and tell your story in a different way.
Yeah, and TEDx, my experience with TEDx Teen, which was in New York City in 2012, that I think taught me the power of asking, because I went up to the connection I had, and I knew she knew the producer of TEDxTeen. I said, one of my dreams has always been to give a TED Talk. And she said, well, why don't you email her and ask if you can give the talk? And I ended up doing that. And what was really cool and unexpected was they centered the theme that year around my story. It was the wisdom of not knowing. So all their stories for that year ended up being around the wisdom of not knowing, which originally I learned later inspired by my genetic testing for this disease and how I've lived without knowing if I have this genetic disease that eventually led to the death of my mom for so many years, and how that shaped the decisions I made as a teenager. Having that platform has been extremely legitimatizing in what I wanted to do, because as you said, it's such a huge platform, and it's great for showing people what I wanted to do so early on and provide some excitement around the idea of Twitch. I think it also was really empowering to, because it was a lot of teenagers, a lot of young women came up to me afterwards saying, I come from a family with another genetic disease and I never thought I could talk about it until now. Or even just 13-year-old girls saying, I'm so happy to see someone who's a role model in science, which to me was weird because I don't consider myself a scientist, but I understood they were excited to see someone talking about genetics in a way that was personal and meaningful to them.
You made the film in an attempt to highlight, number one, the emotional decision of getting genetically tested, but also I think you did a great job of telling what Huntington's disease is, but you did it with people. You had other people on there. You had the people with the disease and their caregivers, their loved ones. You had some scientists from Duke University. So I thought you added the right mixture of science and human beings, and that's what a story is about. It's about people. So I hope people go out there and take a look at it and kind of get that out of it as well. How hard was that to kind of get the right mixture of balancing science and humanity?
For me, the balance of science and humanity was very intentional, because I came into it wanting to make a documentary because when I looked up research for my own testing experience, it was very clinical, dry website listings of steps that I was supposed to take, but I didn't have the emotional understanding of what this would require. And then on the alternate hand, Huntington's disease is very easily dramatized, as many people may know from the TV show House and the character 13, or from a myriad of other TV shows from ER to Scrubs. So it's very easy to dramatize, and a lot of people have taken that into their own hands and created what I think is sometimes a harmful dramatization of the disease. So I really wanted to be careful about those two extremes when I was making it. So I knew I wanted to explain science in an easy way for people to digest. Most of my family, very few have experience in science, a background in science education. And so for me, I wanted my own family to understand it. And I knew Huntington's disease families also sometimes have lower levels of educational background because of the financial devastation and economic and employment devastation caused by the disease. So I wanted it to be accessible to them. For me, someone gave me the advice of, well, why don't you show what it's like after the test? And that didn't make sense to me to show my own story. And I think I was right in that decision because I went to college and I was like, what am I going to show? Like, I'm partying. Like, I don't know. I feel like there's not a lot of nuance there. And I don't want to show it 6 months or a year after. I would want to show it several years out, or maybe show it from the family perspective. And I didn't think I'd have enough time passed to do that. But I had found families locally whose stories I felt would be better at capturing the looking back of the genetic test years out.
Working at his orbicularis oris until failure. Jimmy McKay on the PT Pinecast.
Rock Tape, more than just a tape company. Rock Tape keeps athletes of all levels moving stronger, longer.
With the world's best kinesiology tape,
topical pain relief,
mobility equipment,
and protective gear.
And now physical therapists can get 20% off their first purchase right now at shop.rocktape.com.
Just use the code PTPinecast at checkout to get 20% off.
That's shop.rocktape.com.
With the code PTPinecast for killer savings of 20% off.
Rock Tape, the world's best kinesiology tape.
Spring is in the air. It's the season for growth and new experiences in your physical therapy career. Explore the country with healthcare staffing agency Aureus Medical Group. You'll find rewarding travel and full-time career opportunities nationwide. Know a PT? Make a referral and earn up to $1,000. To speak with a recruiter, call 1-800-340-2619 or visit aureusmedical.com. That's A-U-R-E-U-S medical.com.
Let's give a nice, warm welcome to...
We're back. It's so great to see you. Let's get back to the show now. Here with Kristen Powers, twitchdocumentary.com, at twitchdoc is where you could follow them on Twitter. And again, available worldwide, iTunes, Amazon, Google Play, and Vimeo. I think it was like $7. I'm like, this is something you should watch. It's accessible, like you just said. And I want to take people through. Tell us a little bit, because I still want them to go and get the full story. What's your teaser promo? How do you you begin explaining to what your mom meant to you and what this took away, what this disease took away?
Usually my one-liner for Huntington's disease, that it's a genetic incurable disease that takes away the person's ability to walk, talk, think, and reason. My experience with my mom, I was pretty young, and she was pretty young when she first started showing signs. Most people don't start showing signs until their 40s or 50s, and she was in her early 30s.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, which meant I was about 2 or 3 when she started showing signs. So I didn't really know her, her friends or my family knew her. So a lot of this she was also surprised by because she didn't know her biological father, who was the one who passed on the gene. To all of us, it was a surprise. And I didn't want that to be true. That was a big motivating factor in my life, that I didn't want to be surprised by it. So this film demonstrates the emotional impact of watching someone you care about go through this disease. Some people describe it as the worst neurological disease you can get because of the full symptom load it causes, you know, physically, but also cognitively, emotionally. It's a mixture of a lot of different disease symptoms in one. And so for me, I wanted to highlight her memory while also showing how me watching her impacts my genetic testing decision, which is true for every single person. And I think this is why Huntington's disease testing is so traumatic, because you're not just testing it for yourself, you're kind of testing with the history of a lot of people behind you. And that can be really overwhelming because you know exactly what's going to happen to you based on what's happened to your family. So I wanted to demonstrate that this wasn't a light or easy decision, and that it's a family decision. You have to be somewhat selfish in ending up making the decision to test, because it's ultimately for yourself, but this will impact family and your friends, and it's going to impact you for the rest of your life as well.
I don't want to give too much away, but you made some pretty big decisions as an 18-year-old based on the outcome of your testing. And again, we're not going to tell anybody. So if you're listening right now, spoiler alert, not spoiler alert, we're not telling the end of the movie, which essentially is in the ending of when you get your test results. Mm-hmm. But you made some really, really adult decisions at the age of 18, which was really showing kind of your maturity right there. But you also mentioned your background, why and how you had to kind of grow up a little bit faster was because you were, for part of the time there as a kid, you were a caregiver for your mom.
Yeah, and I like to use the word caregiver because I think that's been one struggle of mine in the HD community with some organizations is convincing them that when we talk about caregivers, we're also talking about kids, unfortunately. For me, that manifested in after my parents divorced before we knew she had Huntington's disease. And so when I went to live with her and my younger brother, she was clearly sick, but I didn't know what it was and I didn't know how to handle it. And that meant she was severely depressed as one of the symptoms. She was making irrational decisions. I usually would cook for my brother. I had to keep track of him because she would lose track of him sometimes and he'd just be at a friend's house, but she couldn't remember where he was. So I would take on that responsibility. And I experience a lot of anxiety as an adult. And I know that traced back because to that time period, because I can remember those moments where my brother was missing and I couldn't find him and just thinking the worst had happened. And I know a lot of my anxiety had come from that time period. And so my dad, once he was able to get custody of us after my mom got too sick, he would always have to remind me that I wasn't my little brother's mom, which was very hard for me. I think just as a big sister, even today, I'm, you know, like my brother's turning 21 tomorrow and I'm not ready for it.
Yeah. It's hard to turn that off, you know, when you were going through that and essentially you were acting a bit like his surrogate mom, you know, taking care of him. I bet you that would be hard to turn off once you didn't have to.
I mean, we were always very close growing up and I have an older adopted sister and a much younger half brother, but it was really me and Nate, the two of us, going through all of this. And that's why he's predominantly featured in the film as well, because I can't imagine going through the Huntington's disease experience without him. And he was essential to my well-being, I think, during my testing phase. And he's always been the goofball. I mean, I think I like to think of myself as being entertained, but he was just like kind of like the slapstick, funny, goofy kid growing up, and he always made me laugh. So he, even though I stressed over him so much when I was in elementary school, as we got older together, we still got in each other's nerves, but we definitely had a much stronger relationship than a lot of my other friends and their siblings did.
I bet. So just to give a brief overview for people who haven't seen it yet, but really want you to go check it out, kind of begins with you pointing the camera at yourself and saying, I'm in this situation. You kind of explained what had happened to your mother, like we just talked about. Then you literally just go through what was in your head or going through your mind about why you were going to get genetically tested or why you weren't going to get genetically tested. I think that's something people feel very like kind of polarizing. Even a couple of your classmates were kind of saying what they would have done if they were in your situation. And I bet you the results, they vary from person to person and for very, very different reasons. What ultimately was the reason that you said, I'm going to get tested?
I think it's something like only 20% of people who are at risk for Huntington's disease get testing before they're symptomatic. And that's the most liberal number I've seen. So it could be even smaller. Wow. And that's considering that I was born the year genetic testing became available for Huntington's disease to the public. So it's really a new process and something my generation's dealing with a lot differently. And I think my generation's a lot more open to testing. And that being said, it's kind of unheard of until my generation arrived to test this young. So I know a handful of people who have tested young, but I think we're going to see this conversation shift to younger people in a few years, if not now. What propelled me to decide to get genetic testing was twofold. So when I was much younger, I'd seen a front page New York Times article of a woman named Katie Moser, who's now one of my friends. And she had mentioned in this article about her genetic testing that her genetic counselor had her make two different lists of what she would do if she had Huntington's and if she did not have Huntington's. Because you can pretty much, if you're diagnosed with Huntington's, if you test positive for the gene, the presence of the gene, you can expect to really lose a lot of your abilities in your 40s, if not a little bit earlier, depending on the length of the CAG repeat in your DNA, which is the indicator they use. If you have over 40 repeats of the CAG strand, then you have Huntington's. That's how they diagnose it. And so for me, I made that list. I realized that the list between if I had it and if I didn't were almost exactly the same, but the timeline was different. So I wanted to do all of these things in a much more compressed timeline if I knew I had the disease. And I also had, unlike my mother, the benefit of knowing if I was going to develop this disease if I tested. So I was like, oh, if I test now, I have maybe 10, 15 years to do these things and prepare for this and save up financially and prepare end of life plans and things like that, that my mom didn't have the chance to do. And I think that really propelled me because I was 18. I was like, man, another 18 years sounds like forever. And then I also was realizing my senior year, I turned 18 in October of my senior year of high school and was going to get tested in the next few months. And I was just continually, even over the span of high school, thinking about my status constantly. And a lot of people told me not to test or not to test that early and that I was being dumb and like making a premature decision. But for me, I just couldn't, again, I have a lot of anxiety and that anxiety of not knowing seemed way worse than even tested positive for this disease, because then at least I could take that knowledge and do something with it. Whereas this uncertainty is like, well, if I have it, I could do this, but if I don't have it, would I do this? And now I don't know which path I'm going to do. Would I change things? Would I not change things? Will I change things regardless of if I test? And that back and forth was way too much for my brain.
Yeah, I mean, that's not even back and forth. That's back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And that's going to hang over you until you get an answer.
Yeah.
I could say that from here because it's really easy. But from your seat, that's still a tough decision, even if there's that much uncertainty.
Yeah, and my parents made me nervous. My dad and adopted mom at the time, my 18th birthday, which I was pretty mad about, decided to bring up my decision to test, and they wanted me to wait until at least my junior year of college. And for me, that I understood why they wanted that, and I knew they were really nervous. But for me, I think I just had a premonition that the community I had in my high school would be unparalleled to anything moving forward. Chapel Hill, North Carolina is not exactly a small town, but the high school I went to was tight-knit. I had really strong friend groups, really great teachers. My family was doing really well at the time, and I just had a feeling that was going to be the best time to test. And looking back, it would have been, just due to a lot of different family situations in the last few years, that really was the best time. And even though I loved my college, those schools are big and the community is different. And I was much more supported, I think, in terms of intimacy in high school that I would not have had if I tested later or after I graduated from college.
The order of the movie goes to your decision, telling a story about your mom. You definitely also weaved in some other people that were local to you that who had also been dealing with. So either the person who had Huntington's disease was on the camera or their caregivers. You brought up one thing that I had never even, I guess, thought about because I'm not in that position, but you thought about what this impact would have on your younger brother. You know, had you had it or not. And of course, because he is your brother, he's got the same 50-50 shot of also having that. So, of course, you're also worrying about him because he's your younger brother. You were taking care of him for so long. But that's one thing I hadn't thought about is you literally were putting that list together, as you mentioned before, and you're saying, well, what's going to happen to him? You know, who's going to take care of me? I don't want to be a burden. You're thinking about this essentially as an 18-year-old.
There's a reason my family used to call me an old soul, because I think I took on the burden of everyone's world and still do to some extent, but I'm working on it.
Just the words you used, it didn't sound like the average 18-year-old. It just didn't sound like that. But, you know, you mentioned old soul, and that term, it really what that kind of nails it. And, you know, just watching the documentary and hearing you talk right now and where your thought process was, it does sound like you really did think about all of the angles. And even when the adults in your life were telling you to do something later, I don't know, good on you for saying this is giving me anxiety and I want to put it to rest. So good on you. So yeah, the chronology of the documentary, Twitch follows from your decision, going back and forth, tells the story of your mom, brings other people into it, talks about the science, And then the documentary follows you into the hospital, into the lab to get that blood test, and then follows you a couple weeks later. That had to be the worst 12 days waiting for those results, right?
Because of the documentary, I was able to talk to a lot of people and hear their experiences. And, you know, so many people were like, occupy your brain those 2 weeks. And some people, 2 weeks was really quick turnaround. Like I told them I was graduating on this day and my results better be in before then. Wow. And they got it. They could not have gotten it an earlier day was what they were saying. They were like, you pushed us to like the earliest you could do. But usually people will wait 3 or 4 weeks or a month or more. And sometimes people elect to, they decide, okay, I'm not ready, but I want to have my results on deck in case I want to see them at some point. So a lot of people were like, I went on vacation or I kept working. It depends on how you cope with these things. And for me, I'm definitely a workaholic. So I was lucky enough that I did not intentionally time it to be at the end of my high school time period. It was just when all the doctors who agreed to be on my film and when I could get my permissions to be in the hospital and filming came through. I was the vice president of my high school student government, so we were putting on this huge festival, and I was finishing up AP exams at the time, and my friends were really great at making sure on weekends I had everything to do, and my family had events planned. So I was actually pretty calm those 2 weeks. Even at the day before, I felt bad because my friends in our study hall were, I think, having their anxiety attacks of their own, and I felt really bad. Some of these guys had like never been nervous the entire time I'd known them, and these like really like macho guys were like hyperventilating in front of me. It was like a very surreal experience. And for me, it wasn't until the next day. I slept well that night. I woke up and I was like, okay, I got to do filming. We're going to do our interviews. You're going to keep us busy for this 1 p.m. appointment I have. And it wasn't until we started driving to the hospital and we were running a little bit late. And that stresses both me and it stressed some other members of my family out. And other family members were like, we'll be fine. They'll wait for us. And that was when everyone started to get nervous, and you could tell because we were, you know, like fighting with each other a little bit more. And that's when I, like, once I got into the hospital, I started to really think maybe I wouldn't go through with this, or maybe I could change my mind, or I don't want to bring the cameras in, or I don't want to be mic'd for this, and just so many things. And I'm really glad I went through with it, because as they say with any diagnosis, to bring in another person to listen or to record it, like when I watch the footage from my experience, it's very different from the experience in the room. And so like that was when I got nervous. That was the day of.
Yeah. Absolutely. So we're not going to tell. I want people to see this movie, found out about it, and just quickly went to your website and just watched the little promo. And that was enough. I was like, I really want to talk to this girl. TwitchDocumentary.com, available iTunes, Amazon, Google Play, and Vimeo. So you got your results. And then you decided, of course, to keep going and tell your story no matter what, which I think is a terribly brave thing to do. You know, turning a camera on yourself and bringing them into that room, as you just said, is a very intimate and very, very intimate situation. It's a very brave thing to do there. So for being able to be strong enough to do that. So we're going to skip that scene. I'm not going to give away your story. You've toured a little bit talking about it after the film has come out. What have you learned while touring with the documentary?
I was pretty lucky that I think the stars aligned and I got to go to a lot of really cool places all over the world to show my film.
Where'd you go? What's cool? Where do you go?
I went to Santiago, Chile, Cape Town, South Africa, Barcelona, Spain. I have not been to Asia myself, but my film has been there twice.
Cool. Nice.
So it's preceded me there. And then all over the country, like so many, I think a little over half of the states just from the tour alone. And I prioritize Huntington's disease support groups. So the first thing I did when I was starting my tour was email all the support group leaders across
the
country. My attempt was to never deny a support group a screening due to funding. So I would either go to the local university and get them to pay my honorarium and my flight and things like that. And for that whole touring period, the honorarium was often cycled back into going to support groups who couldn't afford it. And if I wasn't able to do that, then I would do, you know, Skype in interview or just show the film and give them discussion guide. Like there was a series of, if not that, then this. For me, I think the most interesting part, which actually led to a project I helped spearhead at the Huntington's Outreach Project for Education at Stanford, which is called HOPES for short. I ended up going to a school where it was the only undergrad research program for Huntington's disease in the world, which I did not know when I applied. I actually didn't know it till my first day of orientation when my RA happened to be one of the team members. So I ended up doing an international HD project on behalf of that school group because I was going all over and, you know, discovering the stigma is everywhere, but it's definitely more severe in certain places. Like the people in Santiago are having trouble getting young people to come out, you know, and talk about it. It's a very kind of introverted society in some areas, and talking about HD is even more introverted or stigmatized. Then in Cape Town, it was just interesting learning about the healthcare burdens. You know, so many of these areas are so impacted by HIV/AIDS, or all the funding goes to HIV/AIDS, that, you know, some of these more rare diseases get looked over, or the care is very different depending on how much money you have. And then some of the conferences I got to go to where it was mostly genetic counselors or mostly HD researchers, that was a very interesting experience to see these professionals watch a film. They should theoretically, you would think, be the ones talking to me, but it was a really empowering experience to get to share my story to them on how they could be more empathetic or attuned to the plight of some of these individuals who often aren't heard or listened to.
Sure. Yeah. You took the pathology out of it and you put it into a person. You told the story through, you know, you, your brother, your mom, your dad. You told it through local people. I mean, you told it through people, which I think sometimes if you're not paying attention and you're too deep in the science, sometimes that's good because that's how we get results. But also you got to remember big picture, big picture.
Yeah. And for me, the most impactful group in terms of outcomes that I hope spread to other people were the presentations I gave to genetic counselors. Genetic counselors, according to international testing guidelines, are required part of the testing process, and they can really make or break somebody's experience. Mm-hmm. I've heard of botched genetic testing experiences where people found out awful ways, and you know, most genetic counselors are going to do great and they're going to be fine. But I mean, even there's small things like how they reveal the test result to you, or how they talk about it, or frame what words they use, and how they're going to guide you through, literally counsel you through it. And so that was, you know, my genetic counselor, for the most part, did everything I could have asked for, and I was really lucky in that way. But I think having the hindsight and also being able to talk to other people with their genetic testing experiences, being able to pass along to genetic counselors that advice of even just personalizing everyone's experience and asking them what their preference is for the very anxiety-ridden test day has been really impactful for me and made me feel like that this could make a difference far beyond the Huntington's disease community.
I thought you did a really great job of speaking directly to you, not dancing around anything, but also doing it in a really human way. And you know, I think she was just the right amount of upbeat about it, but then very, very straightforward. I mean, she was putting herself in your shoes. You're like, okay, I want you to be a human and nice, but I want you to get to the point. You know, I want you, can we just get to it? Because, you know, she has to ask a certain number of questions because of hospital procedure. But most people, I'm assuming, if they're sitting in your chair, have done the research. They know the questions. They know why they're there. They've checked yes enough to actually be sitting there and getting the testing. So I think that's a good point. You know, people shouldn't lose sight of the fact that this, they should have empathy and they should remember they're talking to a person who's going through something pretty big.
I'm so thankful for UNC hospitals and all those physicians that were featured on the film for agreeing to put a medical career on film, which has to be super scary considering all the different medical lawsuits you hear, or just framing of doctors or HIPAA compliance and things like that. So they, I know she was a little bit nervous, but considering that pressure, she did a really great job and helped highlight this issue for so many other genetic counselors who may not have been willing to put their career out there like that. You know, she, for me, had a pretty good idea of how much I knew because I was making this film, but genetic counselors are super important, especially in the HD community and with genetics. Probability is a difficult thing for people to understand. And so genetic counselors, sometimes it's hard for those who have been entrenched in it to also get down to the level of understanding how people still might be confused that if I test, you know, negative, that means my brother's definitely going to get it. And that's completely incorrect, inaccurate, but people will be so confused and be like, what does 50-50 mean? Like, does that mean one person gets it and then the other doesn't? And, you know, even members of my own family watch the film and they're like, oh, it's just a shame that, like, now your brother's going to get it. And I was like, no, I made the film to, like, or like, not going to get it. Yeah. Like, I was like, they would just say, make prediction. Even before I tested, they would make predictions. Like, he's going to get it. Like, he's not not going to get it, or you're both going to get it, or there's just like, you know, and then religion came into it, and like, they're like, neither of you going to get it because we prayed, and like all these things. And like a lot of that, those factors you have to be careful about as a genetic counselor, because you don't know where people are coming from and you don't know how much they're going to retain. So their jobs are super hard. They're all usually doing a great job, but to have that nuance is especially important.
All right. So Kristen, every episode that we record is a pint, but at the end of the episode, we do shots. I hope you're prepared for this.
Okay.
This is the Parting Shot.
Powered by Optum, Optum offers weekend courses that are Monday morning applicable, utilizing approaches that make sense.
They promote excellence in hands-on treatment, exercise prescription, pain science, and clinical reasoning, offering a COMT,
as well as an APTA-accredited fellowship in orthopedic manual therapy, both online and in-person mentoring, with locations in Houston, Dallas, and Scottsdale, Arizona. Find out more online
at OptumFellowship.com.
So if there's someone out there, maybe they're a physical therapist, what's a parting shot of wisdom you'd want to leave people with going forward, if they maybe had a project on their mind that was something, you know, as personal as this is to you, for going forward and making sure it comes to fruition?
So if you're doing a project, something like Twitch, I would say start small and just build up over time. The videos that you see of me talking to my computer were done before I even started researching my film, before I definitively made a decision. But it was great to have those because I was slowly creating content and getting more comfortable in front of the camera. And all those are incremental steps. Just talking to every expert you can think of is awesome. Like I talked to, you know, I spent 6 months researching this film before I decided to even fundraise, because I wanted to make sure that everyone had given me input, that producers, that editors, that Huntington's disease experts had told me what they thought, and then I could synthesize all their information from there. And that had helped me, just thinking of all the small pieces of advice I got, like record a video diary or get the experience of people years after they tested, would have been things I never thought of on my own. So the collective knowledge of experts was super helpful as well.
Want to make sure people go and see this. I think it's really important, especially as physical therapists, because some of the PTs out there are going to be working with patients and the families of people with Huntington's disease, and they should know a little bit more about it from the human side and not just the pathology. TwitchDocumentary.com, at TwitchDoc on Twitter, and again, available worldwide, iTunes, Amazon, Google Play, and Vimeo. It's at your fingertips. So the next time you're looking for something insightful and inspirational and a brave story, find out how it ends and watch Kristen's movies. Kristen, appreciate you doing the thing that you did, and appreciate you taking some time out and talking to us about it. And I hope it spreads even further than it already has.
Yeah, that was awesome. Thank you.
Cool.
The PT Pinecast is a product of PT Pinecast, LLC.
It is hosted and produced by PT Pinecast's CEO, Jimmy McKay, and CBO, Sky Donovan from Marymount University.
We talk PT, drink beer, and record it.
This has been another pour from the PT Pinecast.
The PT Pinecast is intended for educational purposes only. No clinical decision-making should be based solely on one source. While care is taken to ensure accuracy, factual errors can be present. Our lawyers made us read that.
Hey, this is Brad Thuringer for Shoes for Kids.
Since 2006, Shoes for Kids has distributed over 12,000 pairs of new athletic shoes and socks
to the children of Baltimore, Boston, Maryland, Tampa, Nashville, Salt Lake City, Orlando, Washington, D.C., San Antonio, and Miami.
Shoes for Kids is all about serving underprivileged and underserved children and their families by providing them with a new pair of shoes.
It is all about making a difference in the lives and the health of our nation's children. You can help by going on the GoFundMe Shoes for Kids 2017 account. You can also learn more about Shoes for Kids at shoesforkids.duda1.com. If you're going to be in Boston in June, please bring a pair of brand new youth athletic shoes and socks. Thank you very much for supporting Shoes for Kids for all these years. We're looking at making 500 kids smile in June, and much due to you.